I want to preface my sermon today by referring back to what I wrote in this week's news and notes. Anti-Semitism is unchristian. I'm not going too deeply into that today, but I do want to make sure that I leave no room for a common interpretation of Christian scripture, which is to criticize the Jewish people in general as legalistic followers of the Mosaic law rather than lovers of God who have experienced revelation of God's love in ways different from we Christians. Only after establishing that can I talk about these Jewish religious authorities in the scripture you heard this morning. You see, the Sadducees you just heard about are simply a conservative branch of the Jewish family in the first century. Not to make too light of it, but for them to say that there is no resurrection is not that different from a conservative Baptist saying there should be no dancing or drinking, or from a Church of Christ member saying there should be no musical instruments in worship. They are interpreting scripture as they understand it, and for the Sadducees, that was only the first five books of what we call the Old Testament. They are simply interpreting that scripture as they understand it, not declaring war on Christians or denying Christ in denying the resurrection. They're denying that there is a bodily resurrection and a reunion of the bodily resurrected in a place like heaven. In the story that you heard today, then, the Sadducees are simply doing what many religious people do. They are using scripture and their own reason to try to lead to a conclusion that they have already reached. The Sadducees did not believe in the resurrection. They did not believe that there was this heavenly experience where we as bodily resurrected people gather one day. So they used a law, a Jewish law, the Levirate law, to try to trip Jesus up about this resurrection thing. The Levirate law said that if a husband dies before his wife bears children, a brother of the deceased husband should marry the widow. This practice should continue as long as brothers keep dying and no children are born. Now, this kind of thing probably grates on your 21st century ears. Not least of all because of the way it denies everything to women. But if we place it in context, we can at least understand it, even if we continue not to accept it. Childless widows were among the most vulnerable people in the first century. Children, especially sons, could inherit property and have jobs and take care of widowed mothers. That wasn't just a nice thing to do, that was essential. The Levirate law assured that these childless widows would have an opportunity to bear children. If the child born of a husband's brother was a male child, the child was named after the deceased husband, and all rights and property passed to him as legal heir. He would, of course, then take care of his mother. I know it would be a long time before he was of an age to do that, but I'm sure there were various provisions for what happened until the child came of age, not to mention the fact that now the widow had a new husband. So now, after we've looked at that, we can get to the actual question that these Sadducees asked Jesus. A woman married seven successive brothers. Jesus, whose wife will she be in heaven? Whose wife will she be in the resurrection. And they were trying to point out how ridiculous an actual resurrection that it envisioned all the resurrected dead in heaven was. They carried this scenario to an extreme. And really, we can understand that, right? I mean, don't we think about these kinds of things sometimes? Those of us who believe that when the roll is called up yonder, we'll be there. Don't we wonder if bodies will be restored? Don't we wonder what happens when children live to be much older than their parents? How will they even recognize each other in heaven? Of those who died of terminal painful illnesses, are they returned to full health? But what about non-terminal conditions like arthritis and diabetes? And yes, we sometimes wonder about multiple marriages and stepchildren and family feuds. Here's the difference. Most of us do not wonder about these things in an attempt to prove that there is no resurrection. We wonder, we puzzle over, we may even debate, and yet we believe. We believe in resurrection. We vary widely in our belief about the details of heaven, but we believe in resurrection. We vary in our beliefs about whether Jesus walked from a tomb and what he looked like. But we believe in resurrection. We believe that death of all kinds is defeated. We believe that we can overcome addiction and reconcile broken relationships and find new purpose after tragedy, new life, resurrection. So after they ask him this ridiculous kind of question, Jesus says, "Those who belong to this age marry and are given in marriage, but those who are considered worthy of a place in that age and in the resurrection from the dead, they neither marry nor are given in marriage." I don't think this is a flippant answer coming from Jesus. I think he's trying to steer them back to what's important. We are neither given or taken in marriage in the resurrection. I think a 21st century Jesus might say to these people, "You are trying to erect a skyscraper with a shovel and a screwdriver. Nothing you know with your intellect can prepare you for this. Can prepare you for resurrection, for heaven. It's your faith, it's your hope that prepares you for this." But here we are, more than 2,000 years later, still obsessed with death and wondering about resurrection and trying to understand exactly what happens, still trying to understand the infinite with our finite minds. Where did all this start? This wrestling with, what does heaven mean? What does the resurrection mean? What about those who have died? Who are the saints? Well, for the church, this is how it began. The Feast of All Saints evolved as the Christian church's response to an early worldview that as the nights got longer, like they're doing now, and the cold got stronger, evil walked the earth seeking destruction and havoc. Halloween traditions, of course, are rooted in that understanding. But Christian communities believed that they had power over that evil, that Jesus' resurrection was a triumph over death, and that each person was called to live in peace and love with their neighbor, and that is how we warded off evil. Brilliant, right? And simple, and so hard. Each person is called to live in peace and love with our neighbor to ward off evil. And so All Saints Day evolved as a celebration of those Christian martyrs who had died defending the faith, living those lives. Over time and through the Reformation, there was growing recognition that a saint was not a perfect or a special person, that each of us as God's creation has the capacity to be a saint. But even if we understand what the church has done in declaring a day to be All Saints Day, we still may wonder why. Of what real benefit is a day like today, and to whom? Well, I think one of the most important things about All Saints Day is that it gives us the opportunity to slow down and contemplate not just death, but life. We do not simply become saints because we die. Our memories do not bring the living peace or hope or inspiration simply because we die. How we are remembered in death is mostly because of how we lived. And so I don't think I'm going too far when I say that all of us are potential saints. And because I believe that, I'm going to break the rest of my message into three parts, starting with the living saints. And let me quickly dispel the notion that living saints are perfect. Frederick Buechner said, "On All Saints Day, it's not just the saints of the church that we should remember in our prayers, but all the foolish ones and wise ones, the shy ones and overbearing ones, the broken ones and whole ones, the despots and tosspots and crackpots of our lives, who one way or another have been our particular saints, and whom we loved without knowing we loved them, and by whom we were helped to whatever little we may have or ever hope to have of some kind of seedy sainthood of our own." I love that, the hope in that, the redemption in that, some kind of seedy sainthood of our own. It reminds me of our friend Judy Cowan, whose legacy to this church we talked about last week, and we honor on All Saints Day with the Judy Cowan Saints Alive Award. Loving Judy was sometimes like loving a porcupine. Sometimes you'd feel all warm and sentimental about her and go in for a literal or a figurative hug and everything was fine. And sometimes she'd have those quills out. But it was worth the risk of loving and being loved by Judy Cowan. She was not prickly about Jesus, though. Judy loved Jesus, and her love extended to Jesus' body, the church. She is the only person I know personally, who literally gave sacrificially of her time and her talent and her treasure to her church. And she was never prickly about that. She was joyful. The Saints Alive Award that we're about to present has gone through many iterations over the years, but several years ago, we renewed the tradition of Saints Alive as the Judy Cowan Saints Alive Award in honor of Judy. Each year, as you can imagine, it gets more and more difficult to select saints, Saints Alive recipients out of the large numbers of dedicated volunteers who bless our congregation and the larger community. So many of you gave your time and talents unselfishly and joyfully, and I hope you know how much you're appreciated. And for those of you who are past recipients of Saints Alive, We don't present those again, but I hope you know that we appreciate you always. Last year, when we began our practice of considering two people or two teams that we wanted to recognize, it became clear very quickly that to recognize one or two people or even five wouldn't cut it. Last year, we were just beginning to come out of COVID. We had survived, and we thank God for those of you who took our church upon your shoulders and upon your hearts, and we recognized 15 of you. This year, though we're not recognizing that many, we are recognizing more people. And this year, as we continue to try to navigate what it means to survive and hopefully to thrive post-COVID, we are recognizing seven people, seven who show up for every single thing we ask, no matter how glamorous, how unchurch-like, how anything, they show up. This is always the hardest part of Saints Alive, because these are by and far people who work behind the scenes and are happy to do that. So when I invite them forward, they first get angry at me, and most of them get over it, I think. And they will be very shy about this, so be very kind and say silent prayers as they make their tentative ways up here. I would like to invite forward for the 2022 Judy Cowan Saints Alive Award, Sergio Alvarado, Helen Haverman, Shelley Key, Mark Anderson. Y'all can clap for all of them. Tom Martindale, Al Reed, and David Murdoch. See this tells you everything you need to know. Me? That tells you. All right, can't quite get everybody up here, but here are some of the things I want you to know that these people do. They paint, they clean, they move furniture, they cut down trees, they work as red carpet ministry greeters, they are part of our Golden Generations ministry outreach, they help decorate the sanctuary, they serve on the worship team, occasionally preaching. They are part of deacon projects, dancing with the children, serving on the ministry architects team, representing us with Labyrinth Ministries. And I think one of them is not here, Al Reed, because I'm guessing he might be outside today serving on the security team. But for all of these things and many more that we did not name, we give thanks for you. And you may return to your seats, and this will be placed in the hall with all of your names on it. It'd be great for everybody to stop by when we get this posted again and to look at the two plaques there, the Judy Cowan Saints Award, Saints Alive. For our church, these are some of our living saints, the ones that we thank God are with us, living out their lives of service, not perfect, but showing up. And the second thing I think All Saints gives us a chance to remember is that we are creating future saints. We are blessed with future saints, the ones who will, I pray, learn from us about living lives of service and compassion and kindness. Some of these saints are the children. They are learning about faith and service and God's love from us. They are learning to be saints or not from us. All of us here, we're teaching my granddaughter about faith. We're doing a pretty good job of it because I hear that she did a pretty good job over the last couple of weeks of rehearsing her younger brother for his baptism today. And we are blessed by the children who say, my church sent me a card because they love me. And we're blessed by the children who dance in the aisles while the drums play, and the children who grow up thinking they own this place. And the children that have the audacity to act like their church will never, ever tell them that who they are or who they love are disqualifying factors.